Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English stead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And on this in this exciting episode, you will hear Jeff say, "That's interesting."
Oh, it's thinking fascinating.
Why fascinating. I say, "Oh, that's very fascinating."
Yeah.
Right. What are we going to hear Jake say? Does he say anything?
Maybe he's speechless this hour. I don't know.
Okay. Well, that makes perfectly good sense. But the telephone number is to call in here if you would like to join with us, ask any questions, make any comments, or whatever. 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400.
I have noticed something of significance. You like that?
Is that fascinating?
Yeah. Financial Times actually has done as good and possibly a better job of reporting what's going on in the United States economy than the Wall Street Journal, which is a little bit odd, to say the least. It's a little bit disturbing. Wall Street Journal, for example, ran a headline in today's online edition that said the headline was a market timing strategy that works. And there is an entire article on how sell in May and go away is the one market timing strategy that everyone can use
Except
that works.
Didn't work last year at all.
And this is what's funny. I take a service called Finding Alpha, which talks about investing strategies and so on. And also today, it says why sell in May and go away doesn't work.
Oh, it's nice to know that we're all on the same sheet of
right.
music here, that everyone agrees here.
But the interesting thing, the one in Finding Alpha had a very good basis for, and I actually wrote a response of the one in the Wall Street Journal saying, "You guys are obviously smoking something illegal, immoral, or fattening." The point is that as Finding Alpha points out, if you shift the days that you're measuring for this, just a few days one way or the other, the entire phenomenon of you'll do better if you sell out on May 1st every year and buy back in at Halloween, it's called the Halloween effect, goes away and reverses itself. All you have to do is just be a few days off. Then there is the other thing that there are periods as long as 15 years when sell in May and go away would cause you to lose a tremendous amount of money. There's a small problem of capital gains. If you're not doing this in an IRA,
yes, the short term,
then you are going to
income taxes.
All of those beautiful taxes, are all those beautiful gains, if you're only holding for 6 months or so, you're going to pay full income on,
see,
not capital gains taxes.
That implies that you have a gain, which means that it seems to be working. And I won't be all that upset. If you got lots of taxes, it means you've got lots of gains. However,
by the time when you figure the taxes in, by the way, the advantages to sell in May and go away
reverse
themselves.
They're not very high.
They reverse themselves.
Yeah.
You actually lose money as a result.
The overall concept here has a major flaw in it. When it works, it works. But you never know when it's going to work. That's the thing. So if you knew to do it last year, well, then the only way you would have known is because it's this year already.
Right. It's called data mining, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, data mining, 2020 hindsight, all that good stuff.
We do use certain principles in the market. That's not one of them.
Nope.
And the reason is we won't use a principle to invest our clients' money unless we can understand the reason, the underlying force that's driving that principle. So if the thing goes away that's driving the principle,
right,
we know to get out of it. Now, so far, we haven't seen that happen in any of the principles that we're using.
The question of why does sell in May and go away, why should that work? Because people don't like summer?
Well, I mean, there's lots of theories as to why, but
nobody's ever...
No one's ever identified it.
Good study to say this is why it is, which means if
tried.
That stops, if it stops, whatever it is that's causing it, it goes away. whoever's still doing it when that reason goes away is going to lose all the money.
When people have studied this and said, okay, here's what I think is the reason, generally within a couple of years, the reason changes, but not in accordance with the market movement. So we basically don't know.
We don't know why it is, so we're not going to do it.
You know, it's like the theory was when stocks split, they would go up. Well, that worked real fine until 2000 when stock splits, they would go down.
Right.
And we have a caller on 773-1400, and you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, enjoy the show. Kind of a little off topic, but I just did my taxes this week.
You have my deepest sympathy.
Now hopefully your pain was mitigated with some amount of refund of your own money.
No, but anyway. My question is, and my tax person kind of left me a little confused, and may be too general.
Confused about taxes? How could this be?
It's terrible. But anyway, me and my wife, we have 401k, a traditional IRA, and a Roth IRA, and we're putting some money into all three of those products.
Hmm.
And we're making enough money now where, you know, there's tax implication, and I may not be able to, you may need more information to answer the question, but it's quite confusing to me anyway. Should I put my money into Roth IRA? Should I put my money into the traditional IRA? Or should I load up my 401k as much? And I think the traditional and the 401k have this kind of the same implications as far as federal income tax.
To
an extent. Is your employer matching your input into the 401k at all?
Correct.
Okay.
Both me and my wife, they match a certain amount.
The
question is, should we put more in the 401k? And
if you're getting matched and you're avoiding the match, you're losing money.
Yeah, that's free money.
That part is no problem. We're matching. We're putting in enough to get the maximum out of match.
Okay, good.
Could I ask you, here's the issue. If both of you are working and you're making a reasonable amount of money, is your IRA, your regular IRA, still deductible?
The tax preparer led me to believe that whether I put it in the 401k or the traditional, I can go, I'm not even coming close to the $22,000, I think she said, max amount that I can deduct.
No, okay, and it's not the $22,000 issue, it's your total income. This is one of the things you want to look at. And I don't have the number right here in front of me, but there is a maximum dollar amount of adjusted gross income that you and your wife can make in a year and still get a deduction for a regular deductible IRA. And if you have a choice between a Roth and a non-deductible IRA, Roth every time.
Yeah, it's not even a choice at that point. Coming back to... I have a question as to why you're putting money into both the 401k and the traditional IRA and the Roth.
Well, this year we didn't have to put any into the traditional IRA. We put it all into the 401k.
Okay.
Probably a good idea.
And we're matching out our Roth. But last year, I think we came near that magical number due to, some money that isn't going to be coming in the years to come. And that's why we had to go put it back into traditional. I think it's about,
We'd have to know a lot more detail, but let me give you some principles here, okay? If you're up in the vicinity of that price of that income range where the IRA is no longer deductible, you're flirting with a problem over there. The only reason that I can think of that a person would not choose to fund their 401k is that the investment choices in the 401k were so abysmal.
And that happens sometimes.
That they would do better somewhere else, in which case you put enough money in there to get the match.
And then put the rest into your traditional IRA, which is a better product.
If your combined incomes do not put you in a position where the traditional IRA is not deductible. That's a key thing to keep your eye on.
If you're not able to deduct the money that you're putting in an IRA, then you should put it in another form of account.
Okay, that kind of okay.
Yeah, non-deductible IRAs
thinking,
are a nightmare.
My wife's 401k is not that wonderful, in my opinion. You know, I'm no expert on this stuff, but the returns aren't. However, the traditional IRA seems to be doing a little better.
Well, it isn't the IRA versus the 401k. It's what the sub-accounts are, what you're investing in inside of it.
The investment's
that's going to make
internal.
The difference.
Yeah.
Very
okay,
frankly,
now,
I have. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
If I put, I meet my matching with the 401k, you know, no mm-hmm. problem. We're getting as much as we can from our employer that way. And then if the traditional IRA or, you know, and I can still get some deduction from contributing to whether the traditional IRA or the 401k extra, it's kind of the same tax implication, is it not?
That's right. As long as your deductible IRA is deductible, then the tax implications are the same.
Okay.
The key,
well, that was what I really wanted. You know, if you guys want to talk more, that's great.
Well, the key on whether or not to contribute to a Roth. Okay, and I want to point out the key on using a Roth or not using a Roth is if you anticipate when you take the money out, you're going to think this is crazy. You're in a higher tax bracket than when you put the money in, then the Roth is probably a good place to put the money. If you're in a higher taxable position today earning money than you will be when you take the money out, then using a deductible 401k or if you don't have a 401k, an IRA makes sense. In other words, unfortunately, a lot of people, by the way, have converted their IRAs into Roth IRAs
at the wrong moment,
at their highest possible tax earnings, and all they did was make some broker or financial firm more wealthy at great cost to them.
I'll try to make this really simple. If you expect to retire in the same tax bracket as you're currently in, and you have a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA available to you, it doesn't matter which one you choose. It really doesn't. You get equal benefit. If you expect to be in a higher tax bracket when you retire, if you're just getting out of college or you're just getting into the workforce or you think that you're going to own a business later on, then a Roth IRA is absolutely the best way to go. If you think that when you retire, your income is going to drop, then you do not want to use a Roth IRA. You want to use a traditional IRA. Mm-hmm. So it's like two ends of the spectrum. If you're at a lower income and expect to be higher, use a Roth. If you're at a high income and expect to be at a lower, use a traditional IRA. And if you're at the same place that you expect to be later, then it doesn't matter which one you use.
And no wonder people are confused about the whole thing.
It's a little confusing, to say the least.
I have done a lot of research over the years on the issue of converting IRAs to Roth IRAs. And I want to be very frank with you and tell you, I have never to this date found a conversion that was advantageous.
No.
To the person making the conversion.
Well, I've seen some. I have seen
really?
Very, very rarely I've seen it. I saw somebody that had a $10,000 IRA.
Oh, okay.
And they converted it to the Roth, and they had 5 years to take that as income. So it didn't have any impact, really, on their taxes, and it gave them the ability later on to pull the money out without paying taxes on it. So,
but,
you know, in that case, it was beneficial. But with these people that have $100,000 or $300,000 or $500,000 in a IRA that they had from a 401k or something, and they convert it to a Roth, they're taking all of that income, and you can spread it out over a period of time, but it's still going in as income to you. And if you pay taxes out of the money that you took out of the IRA, you have 10% penalty on that on top of it. So you have to have the money in pocket to pay your taxes, to do this conversion properly. It's a complicated mess, mm-hmm. and a lot of people get really excited about the concept of not having to pay taxes later on, but the price to pay is paying lots of taxes now.
I can announce an honest-to-God loophole.
Oh, yes, there is a loophole. It's a little complex. Go ahead. This is great.
If you are not eligible to contribute to a Roth IRA because you make too much money.
Correct.
You can contribute to a non-deductible regular IRA.
Just a normal run-of-the-mill. You pay the taxes, you put it in.
You don't get to take the deduction. But let's just say you're over 55 and and you can put in $6,500. So you can put your $6,500 into a non-deductible regular IRA.
You have to pay the taxes. Again, mm-hmm. you're not deducting anything.
Now,
here.
Above all, you can't have another. You have to have no regular IRA out there. So let's say you got a 401k and
traditional IRAs.
And you want to put money in Roth, but you got too much money, but you want to fund a Roth.
Okay.
You can't have another IRA, by the way, or
at
this
all.
Doesn't work. You have to have no IRA. So you open up a new IRA, you put in $6,500, you get it in there, and immediately
convert it to a Roth.
Convert it to a Roth because there is no upper income limit on conversion from regular IRA to a Roth. There is an upper income limit on how much you can make and open a new Roth, but you can convert at any income, and you can put into a regular non-deductible IRA at any income.
And at this point, you don't even have to pay taxes on it because you already did it because it was a non-deductible
IRA. Right. There's no tax penalties. There's nothing. You open up the Roth each year. You open up the regular IRA.
It's complicated.
Together, contribute the money and immediately convert it to a Roth.
To me, I find it absolutely ludicrous, but it's something.
If you're making that much money, it ain't a big deal anyway.
Right.
But it's fun.
Yeah, exactly.
You can legally, you know, all my life I have said, man, I wish I could take advantage of some of those loopholes that I keep hearing about because I
could
never
take
heard,
advantage
I don't
of
know.
It, but it's not a massive advantage.
No, but it, you know, you finally get to feel like you're a fat cat, you're
yes.
a cool dude, you're
well,
taking
you think,
advantage of loopholes.
Yeah,
you know?
If you've
and
got,
it's perfectly legal.
If you've got enough money that you're not able to use the Roth, $6,500 is kind of a drop in the bucket.
Peanuts.
It's not that big a deal.
But
you're
getting,
like, ha ha, I got one up on the government there.
You got there. You got one over on the IRS.
And now let me
such a tiny little pipsqueak of a thing that the government's probably not going to change it.
Let me say something very, very clearly before we take this next call.
Advice.
We do not give tax advice. If we recommend that you talk to your tax preparer, hopefully a CFP or a CPA or a tax attorney if it's a complex situation
or a PQRSD
but
right.
the humor of finding a
honest to God
loophole
that was never
so
intended
great.
A loophole is a situation in the tax law that when they wrote the tax law was never intended to work but works anyway, and it's just humorous. It really doesn't cost the government anything, it doesn't cost you anything. But it is an honest-to-God loophole, so it's kind of fascinating. And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Is that me?
I hope
That's
so.
That's you.
All right. One thing, I just turned it on and caught the tail end of it. But one of the other, I'm curious on your thoughts, one of the other, I did a conversion back before there was a penalty a couple of years ago. But if you do a self-directed IRA and you invest those Roth dollars, there can be a significant gain in terms of if your investment does very well, there's real benefit there versus a traditional IRA.
If you're using
yes.
can you mean converting it to a Roth, it gives you an advantage?
Well, if you have traditional IRA, you convert that money to a Roth, then you invest those dollars in a self-directed IRA. Let's say you invest them in some kind of investment that gives you a very significant yield. You won't pay taxes on any appreciation in that investment.
Well, you don't in a regular IRA anyway.
But you do when you take distribution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you let's just say
this goes back.
Yeah, but you paid the taxes in advance.
Well, yeah. If you take $100,000 and you turn it into, and overly optimistic, but $1 million in 20 years in a self-directed Roth IRA, you will not pay taxes on that extra $900,000 in appreciation.
That's why we're saying if you started young, young.
And you convert a relatively small IRA, traditional IRA, to a relatively small Roth IRA, that's one of the few places where we see some good results. But it needs to be fairly small.
And when people are making we do encounter people who are in a lower tax bracket today because they have a relatively low income, a couple of kids. They're in a low tax bracket today. Using a Roth when you think your tax bracket is going to be higher in retirement, which in many cases it would be for them, makes perfectly good sense. That way you've got the 20 years.
But even though some people, they make investments, whether they buy dirt or they buy a commercial building or something like that, there are benefits on appreciation, even if it's you know, 10 years or whatever, where you can liquidate that asset and not pay taxes on the gains and stuff if it's in the Roth. It's
well, there's still an issue.
Really hard to put a building in a Roth IRA.
Yeah, you can put real estate into any kind of IRA. You
but
can
it's
do
difficult.
It. It's difficult. Now, here's the point. When you liquidate that building, it stays inside the Roth. Say it's owned
Correct.
Inside the Roth. It stays inside the Roth. But the gains on it stay inside there, too. You can get principal out of a Roth after 5 years of having the Roth. But if you try to take that gain out before your retirement date, you're going to get a 10% penalty. It's going
to
happen.
Right. But if the whole goal is to use your Roth dollars just to try to leverage into a greater retirement amount, and that gain, if you leave it in there till you retire, you can draw that out tax-free, correct?
Well, let me simply say that the examples that you just gave, where you bought a building, for example, I think we could sit down and say that if you did that outside of any kind of IRA, Roth, or otherwise, you might be a heck of a lot better off than by putting it into a Roth.
And yeah, the complexity level is...
I could go into some details on that because I've actually been through that, but you don't get to take the depreciation on the building if it's in a Roth. You don't get to take the... presuming that you use leverage to buy it, you mortgage to buy it, which I'm going to presume, otherwise you've got a tremendous amount of money to begin with.
You don't get a deduction on the mortgage interest.
There's a lot of advantages that you miss along the way. And I've actually sat down and compared a conversion from a regular IRA to a Roth IRA using the real estate that you're talking about versus just buying the real estate.
Now, internal to this, again, we got to come back and say it is absolutely true what you're saying. If you do it at a young enough point or at a point when the IRA is not big, if it's big, the tax consequences to you when you convert can be far outweighing of the tax that you get to not pay later on.
Let me also explain that if you decide to borrow money within a Roth IRA to buy a building,
yeah,
I don't know that that's impossible, but it's close enough for government work.
Well, it is, but what a lot of people do are like you'll invest. My point was I didn't hear if you mentioned that. There's a lot of ways to use through self-directed IRAs to really, I've known some people to make significant
money. Is there something other than a self-directed IRA?
That's what individual means. Now, I think when you're saying self-directed, you mean the ability to invest in things inside it that aren't limited to one mutual fund company or something like that. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, there are IRA custodians out there that will, I invested in a startup in Austin. The custodian, you pay a small fee to. They handle all the paperwork. They maintain all the reporting requirements, and they basically just hold it. And if that investment were to appreciate significantly, it would all be tax-free when you retire, which is what the goal is.
Now, so, the startup you invested in Austin, of course, doubled or tripled or quadrupled or what?
That's the hope. It's still early in the game.
Yeah, well, the issue that investing in startups is that about 80 to 90% of them fail.
Oh, I know. Definitely, you got to have, sure.
And a retirement account investing in a highly likely to fail position in a retirement account sounds to me like a little bit counterintuitive.
Yeah, we recognize what you're trying to do, though. You're trying to bring a large amount out of a little amount. You're trying really hard to get there, but it is a complicated and difficult and risky thing.
You guys hate it. I agree with that. But, it was something that, based on all the due diligence, the reward was worth the risk.
Yeah, it's called speculation.
I just was curious, though, if you had talked about the whole self-directed and what you can do when you're in a Roth, there's some real benefit when you're in your 30s and 40s to be able to do some...
Well, generally speaking, the only IRAs that we manage are self-directed, in the definition that you're using. Going forward from there, yes, it is a beneficial to have a place where you can put lots of things in the IRA.
And I'm also going to tell you something else that you may not like to hear. I have actually tracked a lot of people who viewed speculative investments in their 30s or 40s over the years. And those speculative investments, unless you are a professional investor, the chances of you making money on one of those things is so slim that it's really, really hard to see it with an electron scanning microscope.
Oh, there's a possibility here that you've done a lot of due diligence, that you've gone a long ways, because this is how startups actually do succeed, is that some people actually invested in them. So there's possibilities there.
But what I'm trying to say is that the money that you lose trying to find the right one, in every case I have examined and in every study I have read, the lost years involved effectively have a tendency to torpedo a person's retirement.
It's not in every case I've ever heard of or every study I've ever heard.
Hey, guys, I've got to go. Keep talking. I'll listen to you on the radio.
Okay, thanks for the call. I have read some studies and some examples of people that have done it properly.
With retirement accounts?
In some cases, yes.
Okay, I've never found one.
And I'll name some names, and you'll go, oh, I see what you're doing. Warren Buffett owns part of Berkshire Hathaway in his IRA.
But that is anything but a speculative investment.
Well, if you think about what he was doing when he was purchasing companies, if somebody else doing it, we would say maybe that's speculative.
When he first started, it was basically a big mutual fund, and he had wide diversification, and he never invests in startups.
Then we have some of the founders of Google and Facebook and so on. It's rare. It is, and I am totally in agreement
these are people who are either on the inside or professional investors.
Right, professional investors. That is correct.
What I'm saying is the study of individual investors who are doing something else for a living, who do not qualify by IRS standards, for example, as a professional investor, I have never been able to find any evidence, although there have been a lot of people who've done it, any evidence that a person who uses their retirement money to speculate has actually had a reasonable return on that money. Now, that may be there may be somebody out there, but
yeah,
the bottom line to it is that
I agree with you. Professional investors are in a different boat. They have longer.
Well, there's a lot to it. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. We do have some commercials to play. We'll be back on the other side. If you want to call us on the other side of these commercials, the telephone numbers are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And telephone number is near 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
What I want to talk about, the Financial Times.
All right.
Reported was the national debt of the United States. The most objective article I've seen on it to date.
Do you object to this objection?
I think they did a wonderful job. They point out that the debt clocks and so on are running along, and they say that we owe this tremendous amount of money, $16.8 trillion, 111% of gross domestic product. But Financial Times of London points out, false, wrong. Actually, the largest holder of that debt is not China.
Correct.
You know what the largest holder of the debt is?
Yep.
The United States government.
That is correct.
As a matter of fact, the Social Security Trust Fund owns $4.8 trillion of federal debt. So the total debt held by the public is actually $12 trillion. However, it really isn't that high either.
Mm-mm.
The Federal Reserve owns $1.8 trillion of that, and they're actually a branch of the government. So
in the sense of its monetary policies, the Federal Reserve, when it acts as the open market committee, when it purchases these things, they're acting on behalf of the government.
Right. So the real debt, outstanding debt of the United States government is $10.2 trillion or 68% of gross domestic product. Now let's put that in perspective. Germany is often held up as the model of propriety, the model of conservativeness, the hardcore, safe centerpiece of Europe. Their government debt, using the same measures as ours that I just used, is 80.5% of their economy. Ours is 68%. We are the least indebted developed nation on the planet.
Just putting that on the surface, it's really hard for people to gather that. When the government owes itself, we're talking about Social Security there, we've got Medicare as well, but also the Federal Reserve. If you owe yourself money, say you took a loan from a 401k or you loaned from your savings account for paying some bills somewhere and you say to yourself, next time I get some money, I'll put some money back in my savings account. Well, what's to keep you doing that? What's to, if when you get money next time around, what's to say, what, there's no contract or interest that you can't not charge yourself?
A better example, by the way, there is interest on a 401k.
Sure, if you get a loan from a 401k.
But a better one is if I borrowed money, my wife and I have separate checking accounts, and I borrow money from her checking account and put it in my checking account.
And spend it.
Even if I don't spend it, does that constitute debt?
Well, it does if you say, I will pay you back, and she says, okay, you can pay me back.
Whenever.
That's what's going on with the Federal Reserve and the Social Security Administration and Medicare. It is internal to our governmental procedures. And at any point, and this is what's really cool about it all, or really not cool about it all, most debts come due all at once at the governmental level. If you have a 30-year bond from the U.S. government, at the end of the 30 years, you get the whole face value. It matures. That's what happens. Social Security, Medicare, and the Federal Reserve don't get that. They get interest payments. They get renewal of the bond. They never have to pay that big lump sum because it's not part of the contract. And that's something that's quite interesting. When other countries talk about their debt, it is due at maturity. When we talk about a very large portion of the U.S. government debt, it's not due at maturity.
Well, there's even a better piece of this.
Mm-hmm.
The article in the Financial Times points out that Germany's economy is very dependent upon exports.
Very much so.
And any time that an economy is extremely dependent upon exports, the health of its buying economies, which mainly are in Europe, I might add.
Right. Some in China, though.
Are critical. And, well, most of German exports, oddly enough, go to other members of the European Union.
Just like most of our exports go to Canada and Mexico.
One of the reasons that they decided to be nice to Cyprus and nice to Greece is that they loan money to countries like that to buy stuff from Germany so that Germany's economic output can stay up.
And if you think of it the way a Home Depot credit card would be is, yeah, we'll give you a loan as long as you use the card here.
Right. So the United States, on the other hand, only 15% of our economy is exports. Now, you might think, well, that's bad. It's all consumer spending. We're all buying stuff from ourselves. We're making it here, and we're buying it here. Nope. That is really good.
Very good.
Because we are not dependent upon somebody else to the degree that Germany is or most of the rest of the countries
we
in the world are.
Much more self-sustaining.
And now that sounds absolutely backwards to some of the anti-U.S. propaganda that you've heard. But, and oddly enough, and I don't know that this is universally true, just my personal experience of late, the bad news about the U.S., which I would call anti-U.S. propaganda.
It switches from one party to the other, depending on who's in power. Yeah.
For the last several years has been mainly from the Republicans.
Correct.
Bad-mouthing the United States seems to be.
But during George W. Bush's time, it was the other way around. The Democrats were the ones, and the Republicans were the ones saying, if you really are a patriot, you should do this. And now it's the Democrats that are saying, if you really are a patriot, you should do this, and you're not a patriot unless you do this.
I'm not so much discussing the patriot issue as I am the fear issue.
Correct.
I've talked to a number of people recently, clients among them, who are absolutely terrified about the United States economy. Inevitably, they've been listening to relatively conservative talk show hosts who tells them that the United States economy is in bad shape. The United States is in bad shape. The United States is going to collapse. And you know what's funny is years ago, I used to listen to Radio Moscow on my shortwave radio. That's what they were saying
about the United States.
The United States economy was going to collapse. United States economy was in bad shape.
That's what the North Koreans are saying right now.
You got to think that there's a little irony when conservative American talk show hosts are saying the same thing that the North Koreans are saying.
Yeah.
Well, there's some irony there somewhere.
Minus the part, I haven't heard Rush Limbaugh say anything about Kim Jong-un actually scoring holes in one in every round of golf he's ever played.
Well, now we're talking about about the United
States. Oh, about the United States. Yeah. You're right. Okay, yeah.
But I also think it's very interesting that the Financial Times of London is proclaiming the United States economy to be the healthiest in the world, the government debt to be the healthiest and least in the world.
We were just talking last week about The Economist, another British publication, where they were talking about, despite the government, the American people seem to be doing really well.
This is the Financial Times. That's The Economist. Both are, by the way, both The Economist and the Financial Times, both of them out of Britain, are saying that the United States economy is in phenomenally good shape, that despite the dysfunctions in Congress, we are doing a superb job of recovering and leading the world. And yet you turn to American conservative publications and you hear exactly the opposite. That's a really interesting...
It's fear. It is fear. They're afraid that if we make the wrong decisions consistently, that we won't be in that position later on. But the fear is making them say it's happening right now, which if you look around at our economy this moment and compare it to the rest of the world, we're the shining beacon. We're growing. We are actually creating things, making productivity happen. China is stagnating. That's what that inflation is.
And there was an article, cover page article in The Economist in 2002 that predicted we would run off and leave Europe in the dirt.
Ta-da!
And we have. Hey,
we've got more commercials to play too. If you want to do that, let's do that real quick.
Really,
I know you've got
to?
More. You looked pregnant with thought, and when we come back, you can give birth to said thought.
Just gas. All right, we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. We got about 9 minutes left in the show. I did want to address an email that I got this week.
An email address to it? Or are you just going
to
address
discuss
it? Your return address?
The email that was addressed to me.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Question was, with $1 trillion in stimulus, actually there wasn't $1 trillion in stimulus, there was only about 800 million, it really wasn't all stimulus.
800 billion.
Billion. But
depends on which stimulus.
Why?
We're talking about.
Here was the question. It seems like that just paid for a few overpriced government jobs, or a few overpriced jobs. I don't think
that's
not true. But he said, why is an $85 billion sequester hitting us so hard here in Killeen?
Ta-da!
Well, this is what we said was going to. I don't have the data on that, but he apparently is seeing layoffs over in the Killeen-Fort Hood area and cuts. And folks, if sequester continues in place, which it may not, the budgets, the Republicans in the House have been busily passing bills that are sequester-blunting bills, and whether or not they'll pass all the way through and be in the budget for next year, we'll need to wait and see. But if the sequester stays in place into next fiscal year, which begins in October of next year, Bell County is going to have, and we've been saying this a long time, a very, very, very outsized impact. I mean, it's going to have a huge, I think, really big impact on Bell County. The reason is Bell County is one of, if not the greatest, county-sized areas in the United States as far as net federal dollar inflow. And it is going to be a serious impact because the sequester cuts are disproportionately allocated to defense. There are certain areas. Congressman Carter very proudly passed a bill that says you can't touch veterans or GI pay or benefits. Well, guess what? That narrowed down the cuts from the sequester. So if you've got the Defense Department and its biggest budget item can't be touched, and the a disproportionate quantity of sequester is going to hit defense, then everything except GI pay and benefits is going to get hit hard.
That means logistical supports getting hit and contract labor.
Right. And education support. It's Department of Education is getting some pretty severe cuts as well, and that between the Department of Education and DOD, a lot of the education money for Bell County to run our schools comes out of that area, and it's getting chopped. And the reality is, nationwide, sequester has not had any significant effect on employment yet, but in Bell County, it appears to have had already a significant effect, and it really hasn't hit yet. It really won't hit hard until October. And if it's still in place next October of this year, the October of this year, you're going to see an awful lot of people who will need to go someplace else to find jobs, which, if I could, I brings me to another subject I'd like to talk
about.
Yeah,
go right ahead.
You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, by the way. I wanted to move on to another subject. One of the things that came out today is that food stamps remain at record high distribution rates. The underemployed, the people in the system who are working at significantly below the wages they earned earlier, for example, is also remaining at a very high level. And a lot of people don't understand that. How can unemployment be dropping? The economy has, the GDP has recovered to the point where it's higher than it was. The stock market is recovering. Why are food stamps still up? We must be giving away too much money to food stamps. Well, the fact is that there are a lot of people in the United States who just got left behind. Because their skill set is no longer needed during the recession, companies stepped in and replaced them with computers and robots. A lot of them were being kept on because they were just being kept on, and the companies they were in have now downsized, shrunk, reorganized, and their skills, or in some cases they've got good skills, they're just living in the wrong place, and they're kind of tied to, for example, Detroit. If you had a mortgage on a house in Detroit and you finally find a low-paying job, you and your wife working, you can make your mortgage payments just barely, but there ain't no way in the world you're going to sell that house without your credit rating being devastated, without walking away from and honor a debt you signed off on. You're just stuck. And let's say your husband, wife with a couple of kids, and you were able to buy a house because they gave you this nothing down super deal. You're barely able to make it. You're getting by on minimum wage jobs. You're going to be on food stamps. Before, you weren't on food stamps. Now you are on food stamps, and here's the problem. You're going to stay that way. Now, I've heard some complaints about this, about how federal government food stamps. Folks, I hate to break this to you. The states set the standards for food stamps. And Texas, by the way, is one of those states that has record high in its history distribution of food stamp money right now. Why? Because Texas set those standards. And it's just, it's an unhappy thing. It's going to continue. Those folks would have been better off renting. But here they are, and they probably are going to need to move to get a new job. And to be moved will be, to move at this point might be financially devastating to them. It's a sad thing about an economy that stays competitive. This is called creative destruction, and if you're not involved in it, if you haven't been hit by it, then give thanks to God that you were in the right place at the right time.
It is a complex thing, and we need it in order to survive as an economy, but it is at times rather unpleasant for the people involved. So we're about out of time for...
And did you see the court ruling on Stockton, California?
Yes, I did. Yes, we've got the largest... city in bankruptcy so far, Stockton, California, are about to be in bankruptcy, and that's a sign.
It's interesting that they said you can't cut the pension benefits, which are the thing that's bankrupting them.
Right,
but you can, in other words, you can take all of the pain and slam it on the bondholders without cutting. But you can't cut pension benefits.
If General Motors had done that, then they would still be bankrupt. If you can't cut pensions and you have to keep doing what you're doing, they'd still be bankrupt. They wouldn't be able to build cars anymore.
And that's the financial problem facing municipalities around the country. It's a slow-motion problem. It's not going away. They have pension obligations that exceed their probable ability to meet them, which is one of the reasons we tell people that municipal securities are scary.
Dangerous. And it's not that complex to look. It's like looking at a big glob of molasses flowing down the table on a cold day. You can see it coming from a long ways off. And when it actually falls off the table, it's going to be messy.
Yep.
Anyway, we're out of time for this hour. For this week, for that matter. If you'd like to contact us
off... We're out of time for the week?
Yeah. If you'd like to contact us off the air, we have a voicemail waiting locally at...
947-1111. Let me say that again. It's a hard number to remember. We're in Salado, and it's 947-1111.
Well, you can also reach us toll-free at 800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can reach us at Jeff@tpwc.com or Jake@tpwc.com, or you can go to our website, thepersonalwealthcoach.com, for a podcast. Until next week.
This has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.